Good morning. It's 9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. This week, she'll be back next Monday. Well, anytime you see the National Rifle Association and the Democrats on the same side of a gun issue, that has to be news. That's the case when it comes to a new law being proposed to Congress regarding background checks for prospective gun owners. Both sides agree that the mentally ill should not be carrying firearms. We'll have a guest this hour and your calls. And our first guest will be Robert Spitzer, distinguished professor at the State University of New York, Cortland, and author of the books Right to Bear Arms and The Politics of Gun Control, published by Congressional Quarterly Press, and it's out in a new edition next month. Professor Spitzer joins us by telephone. Good morning, Professor. Thanks for taking time to talk to us about this issue.
Good morning, John. Glad to speak with you.
Well, it's obvious the catalyst for this the current legislation that's being discussed was the tragic occurrence at Virginia Tech University, and it was a horrible tragedy. And in the aftermath of any kind of thing like that, there's always a discussion of, well, what could we have done? This seems to be a reaction to that.
Yes, it does. And that is consistent with the past history of gun control laws. If you look back at those relatively few instances when new federal gun laws have been enacted, going back really almost to the beginning of the 20th century, it typically is one of two things that prompts new gun laws. Either it's a political assassination or some kind of mass shooting. And in the case of the Virginia Tech shooting and the response to that, what's interesting and what's different from the past, of course, is that gun rights groups and gun control groups have essentially gotten together on this piece of legislation that's currently in Congress to improve the background check process to make sure, or at least do a better job to see that those who are mentally incompetent cannot buy a gun.
And I think, you know, most people would think, well, gosh, you know, why would we be letting the mentally ill purchase firearms? But in truth, isn't there already law on the books that is supposed to prevent this?
Well, yes, there is. In 1993, Congress passed what's called the Brady Law, the law that requires background checks for purchases of a handgun, and handgun purchases under the Brady Law are to be barred basically to two categories of people, those who have a criminal background, of course, and those who are judgmentally incompetent. The problem with that second category is that gathering data, classifying people into this category, and acting based on that data turned out to be a lot more complicated than was the case with those who had criminal backgrounds. I mean, if you violate the law, you're convicted of some crime, some felony, let's say you're on the books, and that's pretty clear cut. But the standard to judge mental competence is more complicated, and the second and maybe more important problem is that most states, even today, did not and do not gather this proper data and then report it to the federal, what's called the NICS system, the National Instant Background Check System, so that the names can then be checked by people who might try to buy a handgun. So at the time of the Virginia Tech shooting in April, only 22 of the 50 states actually reported mental health data to the federal government. And interestingly enough, Virginia, which of course is where Virginia Tech University is, where the shooting took place in April, Virginia is one state that did report data to the national NICS system. But the student who legally purchased two handguns, his name was not in the system. And the reason why was because even though he was put before a judge and was adjudged mentally ill and a danger to himself and others back in 2005, he was only required to engage in voluntary counseling, and he did, have some kind of counseling. But under Virginia reporting law, only those who were judged or who were required to be committed involuntarily for mental health reasons were included in the list of people who were with that list then sent on to the National NICS system. So he was excluded from the list. It was a mistake. as people now realize, and Virginia, to its credit, has moved ahead aggressively to improve their reporting. And this new federal law is designed to improve this process nationwide.
Well, I just saw an article yesterday in Wisconsin, just to kind of follow up on that point. The state of Wisconsin has already seen a law introduced, or that will be introduced, to make sure that Wisconsin does this kind of reporting and gets that information into the federal system as well. We're talking about the issue of gun control this hour, but with a little bit different twist. This time, the National Rifle Association and other groups that work to protect the rights of gun owners and the gun control groups who have a different take on the Second Amendment, I guess you could say, and the Democrats who traditionally have not worked closely with the NRA. They're all on the same side, and everybody is trying to get something done. And it looks like it will happen. And that's why we're talking about it. If you have something to add to our discussion this morning, and I'm sure you do, please give us a call. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. 800-642-1234, anywhere you can hear the sound of my voice. In Madison, it's 263-1890, 263-1890. If you'd like to send us an email, go right ahead and do that. talk@wpr.org is our address. I'm John Munson, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 7:17. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine, and we're discussing this hour a new law being proposed in the Congress that would make it much more difficult for people who are mentally ill to acquire firearms. It improves reporting. States are being encouraged to do a better job of reporting their information to the federal government. But the news aspect of this is that everybody is pretty much on the same side in this argument. Not quite everybody, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but it certainly seems to be a different debate or discussion than the usual one that we have when gun control is on the docket, I guess you could say. Coming up later today on Talk of the Nation, after 2 o'clock, Neil Conan talks with the author of The Dangerous Book for Boys and asks, what do you think every boy needs to know? There are no video games or iPods in the book, and baby boomers and their sons love it. The book aims to teach kids everything from fishing to tying knots to making a bow and arrow and, of course, first aid. Our guest this hour is Robert Spitzer, distinguished professor at State University of New York, Cortland, author of Right to Bear Arms and The Politics of Gun Control, published by Congressional Quarterly Press, and it's out in a new edition next month. Well, one of the things that we talked about, Professor, that you mentioned earlier is that not all of the states, in fact, not even a majority of the states, are reporting mental health information to the federal government, into the federal system, as is required by law. Why is this not happening?
Well, it's not happened for several reasons. First, the Brady Law that was enacted in 1993 that called for background checks for purchases of handguns did not actually require the states to submit this data such that, I mean, they called for the data to be used, but there was no forcible means in the bill, in the law, that required states to pass this data on, and it also did not provide any funding for the states to gather this data because most states didn't have the data to begin with, at least not on a statewide or any systematic basis. And this current piece of legislation in Congress provides funding for the states to allow them to improve this data gathering. And I would note that, only 22 states up until this year, at least, reported such data, and Wisconsin was not one of those states. So it's good to hear that from you that Wisconsin is moving ahead to gather this data and send it on to the federal government.
Are there some privacy issues here that would maybe bring the gun control law in conflict with other privacy law? I know that federal laws concerning privacy of certain types of information, medical information and mental health information are fairly strict. Are we going to see some headbutting here between two different federal agencies as we try and collect this information?
There may well be, and privacy concerns have been a matter of concern to health professionals, healthcare professionals, and mental health care professionals. In fact, one organization that opposed and has opposed the gathering of this data is the National Mental Health Association. And they have actually argued that those who are mentally ill should be allowed to purchase guns. It's quite a remarkable stand. And they've argued that there are privacy concerns, firstly, about gathering such data and making it available to law enforcement or to others who would, you know, want to do a background check. And they also say that it stigmatizes the mentally ill. And that is a concern, of course. On the other hand, this data is not published somewhere. It is available and accessible for law enforcement, and when a background check is done, a name is submitted to the central data bank, and either the name comes back clear so the purchase can proceed, the gun purchase, or comes back saying, you know, the purchase may not proceed. So it doesn't really go beyond that degree of revelation. And in that respect, I think there is a way to address the privacy issue, especially given that we're talking about the prospect of people with mental problems obtaining guns, and virtually everybody agrees that should not occur.
One of the issues that the mental health groups have brought up has been to suggest that this type of legislation would discourage the mentally ill from seeking help in the first place, and fails to take into consideration the fact that people can be cured of mental illness.
Well, I suppose it could be a deterrent to some who would otherwise seek help, but the only obstacle would be someone who believes that he or she needs help, but also that that person wants to buy a gun. So, I mean, this only enters into that realm when it comes to making a gun purchase. So it's hard to see. One can argue, I guess, that it might prove to be some kind of obstacle, but it seems to me probably a fairly small one.
Our phone numbers, and we do have open lines for you right now, 800-642-1234. That's toll-free anywhere you can hear this, 800-642-1234. In Madison, please use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. And if you want to use the Internet and send us an email, our address is talk@wpr.org. Let's go to the phones and take a call from Dan in Renshaw, Minnesota.
Good morning,
Dan. Thanks for calling.
Yes, this is a very difficult issue to deal with because there's so many different aspects to mental health. Many people have mental health issues and they would never, ever harm another human being. And then you have other people that may be suicidal or homicidal, and so it's really, when you draw a line that says anybody that has any kind of mental health issues, that's really not fair. Look at all the post-traumatic stress syndromes, or what percentage of the soldiers coming back from the war have post-traumatic stress syndrome that would be a form of mental illness. It's just too broad, and a lot of these people would just go and purchase a gun from somebody they know or somebody on the street. But I think that there needs to be a liability. If somebody knowingly sells a gun to a person who is or appears to be psychotic or going to harm somebody else, I think that there needs to be some type of a legal consequence for that. And I think that asking law enforcement to screen all these different people, and like you said before, it's very unfair for somebody who is, maybe when they were a teenager, they were depressed because they broke up with their girlfriend, and so they, you know, they got themselves into the mental health system. And then now later on, they want to be an FBI agent, and they say, "Oh no, you can't be an FBI agent because you have a mental health issue." So, you know, you follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Dan makes a couple of really good points. I mean, the first is that it is difficult indeed to determine where to draw the line. That is, how, as a matter of law, you define a person as either mentally competent or mentally incompetent. And that, you know, that's a subject that I certainly would leave to the mental health professionals. The standard that has been used in most states is a standard that's fairly narrow. In fact, arguably too narrow in some places, as in the case of Virginia. So if you you look at the laws or the guidelines used in the states, they tend to be pretty narrowly drawn, leaving sort of the benefit of the doubt on behalf of the citizen rather than in terms of excluding citizens. The other thing is that the proposed federal law does allow for individuals with fairly what are considered minor problems having been diagnosed in the past to petition their states to have their names removed from the federal database. And it also specifically makes reference to military veterans, obviously a number of whom, many of whom are coming back from Iraq right now, for example, with mental health problems. But they would have an opportunity to at least present information to clear their name or to remove their name from the list at some future point if that can be established.
And isn't it true that sometimes some of these mental health issues can be sort of spontaneous? I mean, a person who may appear to be fairly normal and not getting treatment or not having been reported to be mentally ill suddenly just sort of loses it?
Well, I cannot speak as a mental health professional, of course, but certainly that can occur. That is to say, people can, through circumstances in their lives or through various biochemical reasons, might find their mental health begin to decline. And at some point, depending on how that process might unfold for an individual, they would then, you know, might then find themselves on such a list. And here, this, I suppose, gets to the possible concern that some people might avoid seeking treatment if they are afraid that they might be stigmatized by having the name included on a statewide list of those deemed mentally incompetent. But again, it pertains only to the very specific activity of wanting to purchase a gun. And obviously, the intersection of mental health problems and guns is extremely troublesome.
Well, it certainly seems to be for everybody. I mean, there's, you know, this is one of those issues where everybody seems to think, well, this is really obvious. We don't want people who have a mental illness to be carrying firearms. But then when you get down to the details, things get to be a little more complicated and not necessarily so clear cut.
That is certainly true. But even if you draw the distinction very narrowly, only about 235,000 people are in the NICS background check system based on mental incompetence out of an estimated population of 2.7 million. And that 2.7 million are those who have been involuntarily committed. So that's clearly a big gap that can and should be closed.
Yeah, we're not talking about everybody who has a prescription for Prozac, are we?
That's exactly right. That's correct. I mean, I think most the proliferation of Prozac type drugs. I mean, they're used very, very commonly. And it's not to say that anybody who happens to take an antidepressant therefore is not allowed to buy a gun. It's certainly not in that realm.
We're talking about a background check bill that both the National Rifle Association and Congressional Democrats have worked out together, along with other gun rights groups, that proposes to make it harder for people who have mental problems to purchase firearms. This, of course, prompted by the tragic shootings at Virginia Tech a short while ago. We're talking about that issue this hour, and you can join our conversation. There's open phone lines right now, and we'll get back to more calls after the news. 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. Talk at WPR.org are the ways to contact us. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network. It's just about 7:36. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. And our guest this hour is Robert Spitzer, distinguished professor at SUNY Cortland and author of Right to Bear Arms and the Politics of Gun Control, published by Congressional Quarterly Press, and which is out in a new edition next month. And we're talking today about a proposed new law that would make it more difficult for people with mental illness to purchase firearms. And the genesis for the idea for this show was the fact that there's so much unanimity in terms of the people on the political end of this thing that we haven't seen before or very often on gun control issues. And so that's why we're talking about it today. We do have a lot of calls, and There are a couple of lines still open. Let me give the phone numbers, and then we'll go to the phones and we'll talk to people who have an interest in this. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number to call anywhere within the sound of my voice. 800-642-1234. If you're in Madison, use 263-1890, 263-1890. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And let's go to the phones, and first we'll take a call from David in California. David, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, morning. I was interested in this. The first thing that perked my ears up was the talk about just gun control in its entirety, and I wanted to raise the idea whether or not the NRA is doing a good job. I take it for granted that they're being led like sheep into taking bad advice constantly, and I'll start off by saying I had a great-great-great-grandfather that signed the Declaration of Independence, and I feel an immense loyalty to this country. So I look at the Second Amendment as being the ability for citizens to keep arms in case a tyrant takes over their own government. And we always think of Washington, D.C., but we forget there's county governments, there's state governments, there's city governments, there's regional governments, there's private armies, there's all kinds of things. So the idea that the average citizen can have a gun in case of local tyranny is immensely important. The idea that they would even be discussing whether to further whittle away our ability to hold a gun, much less they're talking about building a database of people who have a gun for whatever excuse. You know, the idea that you could be deemed mentally incapacitated because you believe that George Bush is trying to take over the country, much less that 9/11 was an inside job, things like this. I mean, I could imagine 9/11 people being on the list next for you know, believing that Bush was an insider on, and his Enron cronies were on the inside of. And so should we take away the guns of people who believe that there's tyranny going on in our country?
I don't think that's what's being proposed, but let's let Professor Spitzer respond to that.
Well, the idea behind this legislation is not to restrict access to guns by people based on their political views, but based on a mental health judgment, mental competence. And obviously the government makes decisions every day that have the effect of restricting people's freedoms in some manner. If somebody is convicted of a crime, those individuals have their freedom restricted because there's a general agreement that that should be the case. And there is almost universal agreement that people with clear mental problems ought also to have some restrictions placed on, in this case, access to guns. So that is a decision that, that of course, most people endorse, but also that's considered sensible simply because it's hard to argue that, let's say, somebody who is a schizophrenic should, you know, or who is delusional should have access to a gun. So I don't think it poses a problem. I mean, one could argue that any restriction of any kind of freedom is a bad thing, but I think when you live in a large, complex society, such decisions have to be made in order to protect society.
Well, not to turn this into a discussion of constitutional issues, but really there aren't any absolute rights. Otherwise, we wouldn't have laws that cause us to pay parking fines. Rights to property aren't absolute, for example, and I'm being a little facetious there, but, you know, there are, the society has an interest in its general welfare, and there are certain things we agree that ought not to happen, and one of them is that people who are mentally incompetent shouldn't be walking around with firearms.
That's certainly right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. We had an email, and this goes to a point that was made before the news, too, and I just want to make sure we drive this home and make it clear what we're talking about. But what will be considered bad enough to make it to the list? I have on-and-off depression and was once in a ward for 3 days. Does that mean I would be unable to purchase a gun? If yes, I find that blatantly unfair and biased. I sought help, and I am now doing fine. So this person is somebody who I think you mentioned that there was a process where you could appeal to have your name removed from the list if your condition had changed. That's what we said, wasn't it?
Yeah, that is correct. And the other thing is, and again, I approach this with great caution because I don't know the real nitty-gritty specifics, and I'm not a mental health professional.
But and neither am I.
Like, right, exactly. But it sounds like the circumstances that person describes probably would not have that person's name wind up on the list. But even if they do, there is a process by which you can petition to have your name removed.
Let's bring in another caller. This is Sarah from Chippewa Falls. Good morning, Sarah. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I am a mental health professional, and I feel that it's unethical to deny people rights based on mental illness. I feel that that adds to the stigma that's in our society based on mental illness, although I do feel that it would make sense to, as a condition of commitment, say a person could not own or use firearms, but I feel a database may breach their confidentiality.
Well, let me make a couple points. I mean, Sarah's point is the one that has been made by some mental health groups that are concerned about this whole notion of denying rights, as it were, to people judged mentally incompetent with respect to, in this case, gun ownership. The other point I would make, though, is that as a matter of law, we're really not talking about depriving people of a constitutional right in the way that many people think. What many people think in terms of gun ownership in individuals is the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights. But as the Second Amendment says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And the courts have interpreted that amendment to protect citizen gun owning in connection with service in a government-organized and regulated militia. It's not been interpreted to mean that people have a right to own a gun for any purpose that they, you know, set upon themselves. So strictly as a matter of law, there is no fundamental deprivation of rights here. And when that's combined with the pretty narrow category that we're talking about here, I think it poses much more of a social issue and a political issue than a legal issue.
Let's take another call. We'll go next to Mervin in Burlington. Mervin, you're on the air. Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Hi, John. My question is similar to the previous question, and that is I'm a mental health professional as well. I have concerns about any national register that might infringe the rights of those with mental illness in other areas. For example, would this register be available to others who could then deny access to health care? And the second issue is, really, is it not an issue of dangerousness rather than mental health per se or mental illness per se? And so shouldn't one really be gathering that kind of data?
What kind of data is that? I wonder what kind of data that Mervin's referring to.
Well, data concerning dangerousness, isn't that really the issue? It's not so much mental health or mental illness, but a person's level of dangerousness that is at issue.
Hmm. I'm not sure how that would be measured, aside from the mental health criteria that would pertain to whether a person is considered a danger to him or herself or to others. I mean, it seems as though that is what that concept is trying to get at.
Well, we're at weather time. We'll continue this discussion right after we check things around the state of Wisconsin, and we'll let you have another chance to join us. We still have some open phone lines, and, of course, the Internet is available to you. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Our phone numbers, toll-free anywhere you can hear this broadcast, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. In Madison, please use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. Our topic today is a new piece of federal legislation that would make it more difficult for people who have been judged to be mentally incompetent to purchase firearms. That's what we're talking about. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 7:47. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, coming up after 11:45 this morning, according to Larry Mueller's guest, we need to heal the broken bond between nature and our young people. Larry's guest is Richard Love, author of Last Child in the Woods. That's after 11:45 today, coming up on the Ideas Network. Well, this hour we're talking about whether or not we need a new law to make it more difficult for the mentally ill to obtain firearms, and probably I should be more careful about throwing out terms like that. We're talking about a very narrowly defined group of individuals who have been adjudicated as incompetent or have been involuntarily committed, according to what I've read here. And the interesting part about this, from a news perspective, is that both gun control and gun rights advocates have been on the same side of this issue. And to help us to understand what's going on here, our guest is Robert Spitzer, distinguished professor at State University of New York, Cortland, and author of Right to Bear Arms, and also The Politics of Gun Control, published by Congressional Quarterly Press, out in a new edition next month. And Professor Spitzer, before the break, we had a caller who had some concerns about who would have access to the database of the mentally ill. The states would be reporting, collecting and reporting this information to the federal government. It would be in the NICS, the NICS system. Who has access to that?
Well, presumably, law enforcement would have access to it, although under the law right now, the presumably law enforcement would have access to that information when investigating a crime, for example. And in addition, if a gun dealer wants to run the NICS check, the gun dealer doesn't get to, you know, examine all of the names in it. A name is submitted, and a response comes back regarding the particular individual who's attempting to purchase a gun. So there is that kind of access, but that's only to determine if the particular individual who wants to buy a gun is in the system or not. So obviously there are privacy concerns. There's also the kind of concern reflected in some of the callers, which is what you might describe a slippery slope problem, the concern that this database might morph into something else, or that all sorts of other groups might gain access to it, or some such thing. But it exists for a very specific and narrow purpose.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got people waiting to talk to us. And next up is Todd from Baraboo. Todd, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning. I'm a legal professional. I'm a county corporation counsel responsible for doing mental commitments. And I would just submit that I think the due process on this might be backwards. And in my view, I think that the due process should exist when you're going to place somebody on the list, and that there be some kind of notice and opportunity to be heard before people are placed on the list, as opposed to having to petition to get your name off the list. And I guess I'll take the comments off the air.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, that's a nice point, and he's quite correct, I think, in the way he describes that. I mean, one undergoes a process in order to be placed on the list of those judged mentally incompetent, presumably in judicial hearing or similar procedures. So that is the threshold, the adjudication process initially, and then you've got this backup that if you think, you know, you're in a better situation and you want to get your name removed, you can then do that. But Todd, I think, is quite correct about that. It's a good point.
Well, I can say in the information that I have about the proposed change in Wisconsin law is that it would require handgun background checks to access mental health information that would prohibit a handgun purchase under current federal law. The Wisconsin Consolidated Court Automation Program, or CCAP, would be required to provide the necessary information to Wisconsin Department of Justice, which would then turn it over to the NICS. And so there is a process involved here, and it would be my assumption, of course assumptions are always dangerous, that other states would have similar safeguards in order to maintain people's rights to due process. Let me give the phone numbers again, because we've got a couple of lines that just came open. You still have time to join us. 800-642-1234. It's a toll-free number. And our local number in Madison, if I can spit the words out here today, 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org. The
This effort has drawn serious bipartisan support. And in fact, one of the interesting pieces of this is that the sponsor of the legislation in the House is somebody with whom the National Rifle Association has had a major conflict. Representative Carolyn McCarthy, a Democrat from New York, who basically got elected because of her passion after her husband was gunned down on a commuter train. And she's been a gun control advocate. The interesting part of this is that she's on the same side of this issue as the National Rifle Association, and that's a real switch.
Yeah, that is certainly true. It is an interesting coalition, and joining with Representative McCarthy is another Democrat who is a pro-gun rights Democrat, John Dingell, a representative from Michigan, one of your neighboring states. And Dingell formerly served on the board of directors of the National Rifle Association and has been a longtime supporter of gun rights. So they've combined forces on this particular issue, and it is highly unusual in politics. And it does show, I think, to make a political point, that it is possible for disparate sides to get together on some issues, and might be an interesting lesson for President Bush to take note of as he tries to build a coalition for his immigration bill.
Let's go next to Jody in Spring Green. Jody, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My question was, I was wondering if there were statistics that showed whether or not the people that are having these problems with the gun control are indeed, in fact, have been seen for mental illness. I guess my point is that some people who are seeking help will go and get help and therefore be on, let's say, our database. But I feel that there are people who may not be out there that have not sought help and therefore would not be in the database, that are perhaps the ones that are out of control and perhaps, causing the problem.
Yes, I think I understand Jody's point. Obviously, there have to be some X number of people in society who do have significant mental health problems or mental health issues, who have not sought assistance, who have not, been processed through the judicial process or the mental health administrative apparatus, who would indeed pose a threat, and whose name therefore also would not be on the lists sent by the states to the national background check system. So that is, that is a matter of concern, of course, for those who want to restrict access to guns by those who clearly have mental health issues. So, Jody is certainly correct in describing the situation of those who would not be covered even under the current law.
Well, there's no such thing as a perfect plan, I guess. I mean, there really isn't any way to put something like that. You can't legislate that because if you don't know who these people are, you can't. There's no way to reach them. Let's go next to Mary in Oshkosh. Good morning, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I'd like to make some comments related to the previous caller's issue that we should probably be focusing on dangerousness rather than the mental illness. As a group, research indicates that the mental illness are not more dangerous as a group, in fact, less dangerous than the psychopathic population. There are risk assessment tools being refined at a fast pace right now. And I guess I would suggest that the focus be on measuring the dangerousness of the individual if, in fact, they are committed involuntarily, and that perhaps those people be placed on the list rather than the umbrella approach of putting everybody on there and run the risk of breaching confidentiality because our databases aren't that secure. And even having that information in the hands of the law enforcement officers, they really need to know those people who are at risk to harm someone.
Well, let's let Professor Spitzer comment because we're almost out of time.
Yeah, Mary's raising a question others have raised too. I think the whole notion is that you're getting at a subset of people apparently have mental health problems, and that's why you're focusing on those who are involuntarily committed, and that being a basis for having their names included in the NICS system. It's not everybody who sees a psychiatrist or a psychologist or everybody who is deemed to have some kind of mental health issues. The idea is to get at that subset of people with mental health problems who do pose a risk to others or to themselves, and to try and prevent them from getting direct access to guns.
Well, one thing that should be clear to everyone is that the individuals who wrote the Constitution did as well as they could in trying to foresee all circumstances, but it's a pretty impossible task to devise a system of laws that covers every possible eventuality.
Well, of course that's right. And the other thing is that just because we have laws on the books doesn't mean that they're always followed, but it also doesn't mean that we ignore the laws or repeal the laws. I mean, we have laws against murder. People still commit murders, but we don't talk about chucking those laws. We still want those laws on the books because they represent society's view of what is proper and improper behavior, and it's a way to send a signal to others about how their behavior should occur in society as well. So, I mean, laws serve a number of purposes, and the same can be said of the laws designed to limit access to guns by those judged mentally incompetent.
Well, I think that's a great way to summarize our conversation, and since we're out of time, we'll leave it there. This program was produced by Karen Prager and Christina Taylor, who also did on-air production for us today. It's program 613B. If you'd like a copy of it, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444. I'm John Munson, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.